is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Good grief, is that the time already? Mystery Hour, you say? Thursday, you say? Gosh, what are we going to do? The excitement may become too much for us all to bear. And I completely forgot to do Woke Watch as well. I'll do it tomorrow. It's a good one. Do you know how this works? Could you remind me? Would you mind? Someone talk? No, I've got to do everything, honestly. It's ridiculous, the division of labour in this relationship. When are you going to start pulling your weight? Why do I have to do all the heavy lifting? Not to mention most of the talking. Mystery Hour is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. You ring in, someone rings in with a question, and then someone else rings in with the answer. It's a little bit more complicated than that. Otherwise, it wouldn't have its own board game available not only online, but now in all branches of John Lewis. Did I mention that I saw it in Peter Jones in Sloane Square the other day, and it was one of the proudest moments of what passes for my career? Genuinely, I was on my own as well, which is a shame. I wish I'd been with the kids. Actually, I'm probably glad I wasn't with the kids. They're reaching the stage now where they'd just be like, oh yeah, whatever, Dad. But it was magical. It was magic. I mean, truly magic. See it there, sitting on the flipping thing next to like Monopoly and Scrabble and James O'Brien's Mystery Hour. And you can win a box. You can win a game yourself if you make what is my favourite contribution to today's Mystery Hour. All the terms and conditions for that competition are available at lbc.co.uk. So someone rings in with a question, someone else rings in with an answer. The only real rule... The only real rule is this. Don't look it up. Don't look it up. If someone asks a question and you think, oh, I know that, I'll just Google it. I'll Google it. Don't. The whole fun of Mystery Hour is the reasons why, well, not the whole fun, but a large part of the fun is the reasons why you know what it is you know. Because sometimes some amazing stories emerge, and the best stories, of course, often lead to a Ray Liotta, which is the highest accolade available on British radio, and which we have, after some consideration, decided to keep, despite Ray's passing a couple of weeks ago. A very, very sad day. But the point is, of course, that the journey is often more interesting than the destination. So that's the only real rule. Don't look anything up. Don't look anything up at all. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. If it wasn't Mystery Hour Day, I'd probably wax lyrical a little bit about that pardon for witches in Scotland, because I'm get to North Berwick quite a lot, particularly when the festival's on in Edinburgh. I don't think we're going to make it this year, but I love it up there. And the story of the witches in North Berwick, who ended up being blamed for the storm that nearly killed... Oh, it's one of the Jameses. I forget which one. When he'd gone all the way to Europe to pick up his wife and bring her back on a ship, and there was a storm that nearly killed them, and he blamed it on witches, and then embarked upon a bloody mission to execute as many of them as possible. It was an absolutely horrible chapter in Scottish history, but one that obviously still resonates enough for Nicola Sturgeon to take steps to issue pardons. Shall we crack on with Mystery Hour at 12:07? Have I covered all the bases? I think I have. Duncan is in Acton. Duncan, question or answer?
Hello, mate. It's a question, please.
Hello, Duncan. What's it going to be?
I'm wondering, did humans, Homo sapiens, ever, in any point in history, schedule their offspring to be born in the spring like most of the animal kingdom do?
So what, April?
Yeah, I mean, around the spring, you always see the lambs in the wild, you see the bears.
December.
Did we ever used to do it?
November, October. September. So you'd be having sex in August?
Well, yeah, around there.
So did humans... Did Oh, yeah, I should have... You know, I just counted back 9 months, and Keith just said in my... You should have just counted forward 3 months.
Forward three, yeah.
He's not as thick as he looks, is he? I am... So did humans ever... schedule? I wouldn't have thought so, would you? I mean, I don't know if animals do it like that, do they, isn't it?
Well, they do, yeah. I mean, if you're walking around the wild in spring, you always
lambing. Lambing is a thing, lambing. But is that who's made that decision? The sheep or the farmer?
in the wild, in America, birds. You always see young wolves, young bears. You know,
yeah. What an amazing question! What a brilliant question! What made you think of it? You don't see many wolves in Acton.
Me and my wife were driving through the Buckinghamshire countryside the other day, and we saw all the lambs, and it sparked that question.
It's a cracker.
I said, I don't know whether we ever did it.
I wonder if anyone does. We'll try and find out. So did human beings ever sort of schedule the birth with the seasons, like a lot of animals do? Ooh, Duncan, an early lead there for the Mystery Hour board game, I've got to say. That's a cracking question, although there's obviously an awful lot of room left for people to catch you up. So he's right, of course. I mean, all over the animal kingdom, you see the season of birth being spring. Have humans ever been part of that? 0345 6060 973. Kieran is in Maidstone. Kieran, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Okay, so I was with my wife the other day, and we were walking. we were walking along this road, yeah. And it looked completely flat.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't until we were walking the road, and then my wife said to me, "Are we walking uphill?" And then I looked behind me, and then you could see the gradient going back down behind you. But then looking in front, it looked completely flat. And it just reminded me of, like, I remember watching a program one time. I've forgotten if it was in Wales or Scotland. There's this really, really, really steep road. And the locals say that it looks completely flat. So my question is, why can't the brain recognize an incline when you look at it? And, yeah, so, like, literally, that's my
when question. You, well, it can't. I mean, it was a very straight road.
Yeah, it was.
That's the answer.
Oh, okay.
Because if it was a windy road, one bit of the wind would be above another bit of the wind, and you'd see that it was a hill. But the straight road, I don't know where I'm getting this from, or quite why I'm so confident I'm right. The road looks straight, so there's nothing that actually indicates the incline, is there? If it's a straight road, but if it's a bendy road, there is, I think.
Yeah, but then what about when you're in a car and you're driving, and the thing is, you're driving up and you can see the brow of a hill.
Yeah. Well, then the brow's getting nearer, you know that you're on a hill. But if the incline if there's no brow, as it were, or if it's not steep enough to really merit a brow, as it were, then you're never going to, I don't know that you're ever going to notice that it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to take the round of applause. I'm going to leave it on the board, but I think it must be. That's why the straightness seems to me to be significant.
Yeah, well, yeah, like, it was effectively a very straight road, so that, I think that'll be my question was very silly.
No, it's not silly at all, because I'm really thinking about it now, and someone's just texted saying the road is in Cumbria, but I presume that that's the second part of a text from Mark in Hampshire. Otherwise, he's stalking you, mate. And were you in Cumbria?
No, I live in Maidstone.
Shut up, Mark. He wasn't in Cumbria. No, that must be a second part of a text that I didn't see the first part of. But I don't know. Why can't you see an incline on a straight road? 0345 6060 973. I like that one. I like the first one. It's a good week so far. Danny's in Barnstable. Danny, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I'd like to know if chilies actually burn our mouths.
As in leave lasting damage?
Well, they don't leave lasting damage, do they? But the pain, anything else that causes that amount of pain, if you eat something hot, would leave some sort of damage. Yes, exactly. They don't leave lasting damage, but are they actually...
Well, if they don't leave lasting damage, it can't be a burn. Can it?
Well, it's something. Well, anything that's hot burns you.
Yeah, but if it... I mean, a burn...
So how would you describe a chilli, then?
Well, I would call it a burn. But I don't think it is a burn. Well, I don't know what you mean by burn. This is really a question about the meaning of the word burn, isn't it? Rather than what chillies do to our mouths.
What does burn mean?
Well played.
Well, I was cleaning some windows, talking to a guy, had a big polytunnel full of chilies, growing them everywhere.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, can I take one home?
Yeah.
He said, you couldn't eat these. He said, they're more or less industrial strength. They're cultivated for pepper sprays and things like that. They're especially these ones. He said, whatever you get on a Scoville.
Yeah, that's the scale.
This will blow it out of the water. It's millions and millions, he said. But he told me that you shouldn't, your brain thinks you shouldn't eat a chili, so it tricks you to thinking it's poisonous, and that's why you get the sensation. But I wasn't quite sure about it. I was thinking I need a definitive...
No, but we need to pin down the syntax again. So by burn, I mean, is it the same, is it chemically the same or physically the same as if you touch something very, very hot? We kind of both know it isn't, don't we? It can't be that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'd get blisters like you do when you... When you have a thing.
Okay, so we ask, what does a chili do to us? Then?
Bingo.
Should we ask that?
Yeah, I think doesn't it just activate the capsaicin receptors, which mimic burning?
Possibly. I'm not sure about them receptors. I've been into my curry cooking lately, and there's a thing called Mr. Naga, which is chili paste.
Yes.
And I opened a brand new jar of it. Never used it before. Seen on a few YouTube videos.
Go on.
And I nearly said to my daughter, I'll give you a tenner if you have a teaspoon. But I didn't. I just touched...
Mate, that's social services territory, that is. That's outrageous behaviour.
I touched my tongue on the tip of it, and I'm so pleased I never gave it to her. I should have been up the hospital.
Oh, bless her. And did you put it in a curry, or did you put it back in the cupboard?
I put a quarter of a teaspoon in a madras. It was nice, but
it did the business. I think you should have called that fella's bluff and had a munch on one of his chilies, Danny, just to see.
I might send one to you. You can tell me how it is.
You'd be up the ladder faster than you've ever been up it before in your life.
Oh, we're not old-fashioned window cleaners, Dan. We don't use ladders.
Of course, no. You've got the big things now, have you? With the poke. Yeah.
Poles,
that's quite interesting. Danny, top man, we'll get you an answer to that. What goes on? What happens when you think your mouth is burning after eating a chili? Because it isn't burning in the conventional sense, because you don't end up with burns. 0345 606 0973. I love three crackers there. Duncan, Kieran and Danny really setting the bar high on this week's Mystery Hour. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The time now is 12:15.
Hang your heads in shame.
Some of the new comedians are struggling to impress the Taskmaster.
Suck up to you and win.
Yeah, it's not rocket science.
While others have won his seal of approval.
Taskmaster's very happy.
Find out who's up to the task as Bridget Christie, Sophie Duker, Judy Love, Art O'Hanlon and Chris Ramsey do battle in brand new Taskmaster on Channel 4 and All 4.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 17 minutes after 12. Did humans ever go in for seasonal birthing? There's got to be a pithier way of putting this, but you know how lots of other animals, mammals, have their babies in the spring. Did humans ever do that? Someone's pointed out they are called offspring for a reason. No. Why can you not tell you're going up a hill when you're on a straight road? 0345 606 0973. There's a road in Scotland, isn't there, that is a an optical illusion. And Stuart Ipswich says there's something called the Magic Road in Ireland, which is very bendy, so I'm not sure you're right. It's perfectly possible I'm not right. I was quite honest about that with Kieran. It just struck me as possibly part of the explanation. And what happens when a chili burns your mouth? Because it's not burning in the normal sense, in the fire heat sense of the word. Sally is in Ascot. Sally, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Can giraffes swim?
I can't believe we've never had that before. Why do you want to know? What have you got planned?
Nothing planned at the moment.
Could go in much deeper water than a horse, couldn't they, even if they were walking?
Have they ever been anywhere that's deep enough to find out? And even if they could swim, because horses can swim.
They can, which is what makes me think that a giraffe probably can as well.
But its neck so long, would it counterbalance so that its neck would almost tip it upside down?
No, you're just being silly. How would that? What do you mean? What do you mean? A neck would
take like its neck so long.
Into a lake or something really deep, like an ocean, because the average river is not going to be. It would be able to walk through a river with its head above the water.
It would have to be somewhere really deep. But even if it was somewhere really deep, because its neck.
But then hang on a minute. No, we swim even though our feet can touch the bottom, because it's a more efficient way of getting through the water. You never look at a swimming pool and think, oh, I'll just walk to the other side, do you? You will swim when you jump in, even if your feet can touch the bottom.
Yeah. But I don't know if their necks would have an issue, cause an issue.
I don't imagine they would. I imagine that they're pretty strong, wouldn't they? I shall find out. I mean, listen, we don't need to overcomplicate it. Can giraffes swim?
Yeah.
Can giraffes swim?
I think they probably can, but I just wonder if anyone's ever been able to find out.
0345 606 0973. Well, of course someone's been able to find out. You just push him in, wouldn't you?
Bit harsh.
It's not that harsh. If it's like working a safari park or something like that, and all the punters have gone home, and you've got, I don't know, a convenient sea lion pool or something like that, and a giraffe. You'd start with a small giraffe. If a small giraffe can swim, if a baby giraffe can swim, then a big giraffe can swim.
Well, let's find out.
0345 606 0973 is the number that you need. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Katie's in Warwick. Katie, what would you like to say? I mean, sorry, God, that's not what happens for this hour of the show. It's Katie, question or answer in Warwick.
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Katie.
So, my question is, decimal numbering system.
Yours.
How did France, or the French language, kind of develop a system where instead of having a name for 80, for example, they have 420s?
What is it again? 80? Van... No.
Well, they don't. They say Van Cat, don't they?
That's 24.
420. And no, what do they... Cat, well...
See, I nearly said something rude then. I don't know why I had the French number in my head that equates with something a bit fruity. I'm very glad I didn't, but I knew it wasn't Van Catra. It's
Catravan, isn't it?
Catravan. Catravan, yeah. Catravan. Catravan. Catravan.
Yeah, and 60 is... 70.
Don't go with the 60. That's what I nearly did. Don't go there. That's...
It's 60 and 10, isn't it?
70. 70? Je pense, oui.
So, I'm just interested to know...
It's just a rubbish language, isn't it? It's just a rubbish language. It's just a rubbish... Why can't they have a number for 80, like normal languages?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. Why did that ever become a good idea?
And who thought that one up?
Language?
Well, maybe it makes more sense metrically. Maybe it makes more sense. It's actually easier to do calculations.
Well, why are they the only ones that have decided that's the best idea?
I don't know that they are. How many languages are you familiar with?
Well, I was speaking with a group of linguists. Be careful how I say that. Yes. A group of linguists last week. And nobody knew the answer, and some of them did French.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. So, I mean, we've got soixante-dix and quatre-vingt, most obviously, for 70 and 80. What's 90?
Isn't it 80 and 10?
Quatre-vingt-dix.
Isn't it
I think it is quatre-vingt-dix.
It's just getting silly, isn't it?
I tell you what, I should know all this. We've got GCSEs going on in our house at the moment. I've not been much use on the old revision. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So why don't they have numbers for these big numbers? Names for these big numbers? Names for these big numbers. That's what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely question there. Thank you very much. Oh, we'll try and get you an answer. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Sam's in Nottingham. Sam, question or answer?
Hi. Question. I'm actually in Lincoln at the moment.
That's cyber London. I can't take your call, I'm afraid. I've used up all my Lincolns. No. I've used up all my Lincolns for this week. I'm a couple of Nottinghams short.
Whoa. Well, I was there yesterday.
That'll do. Carry on.
Right. So, question, human infants seem to be lulled and even put to sleep by singing and lullabies.
Hmm.
Why?
Does it...
importantly than the current why... How did that come to pass evolutionarily? That seems, in a world of predators, that's I don't know.
What
to survival?
Have you got a little one at home? Have you been singing lullabies lately?
Well, this is why I'm in Lincoln. I've got two twins. We're in the neonatal unit at the moment.
Oh,
so,
how lovely! Is everything all right?
Yes, it's just about getting there. They're going home soon.
Oh, how exciting, Sam.
For a bonus point, I fall asleep when they're playing the music in there as well, so adults too.
I think it possibly recreates the atmosphere in the womb.
Well, I do wonder that.
Mm. Well, it has the same rhythm as your heartbeat, so it... I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. I'll put obviously the question's going on the board. Why do lullabies work?
The rocking is very much... it simulates the mother walking during pregnancy.
What do you mean the rocking? I mean, you don't have rock and roll lullabies.
No, physically rocking.
I know. I figured it'd be it. Why do lullabies work? That's the question. Why do lullabies work?
Yeah.
Yeah, love it. You're on. Good luck with everything. Are they your first?
No.
Oh, lordy.
Fourth and fifth.
2, 3, 4. First twins, though.
Yes.
God grief, you've got a busy few years ahead, haven't you, mate? This is probably the last time we'll ever talk.
Maybe.
Look after yourself, Sam, and best of luck with the new arrivals as well. Love to their mum. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Why do lullabies work? Or how do lullabies work, perhaps? Harry is in Chiswick. Harry, question or answer?
I want an answer.
Carry on, Harry.
Right, the giraffes, they can't swim.
How do you know?
I see it on QI.
Oh, that'll do.
That Alan Davis with a puppet demonstrating it. and it's the weight of their neck that basically they can't get into a swimming position.
But that's so what Sally suggested. Sally thought it might have something to do with their neck.
Yeah, so if they went in deep enough water, essentially the head would have to go up to breathe and they would be then in a viable swimming position.
Because they can't go flat. If they could go flat, if the neck could come all the way down,
like a horse, it would take it out of the water.
Well, I never. Who'd have thought it? And QI is fairly definitive, isn't it? The old alarm?
They show it on Dave and then give a change of answer. But yeah,
no, I'm with you. qualification. Saw it on QI. Round of applause for Harry.
QI, yeah.
First one of the day.
Thank
well
you.
Played. No, lovely
thank you
stuff.
Very much.
Well done, Sally, as well, for sort of second-guessing what the answer might be. 26 minutes after 12. There's one phone line free. If you're quick, don't text me complaining, but get involved. Ben's in Haringey. Ben, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It is about the French numbers.
Yes.
So it the old sort of way of counting actually dates back to sort of Celtic times.
Go on.
When they would stop at like six. You see how we also just had seconds to 60.
Yeah.
And then...
So pre-metric, in a way.
Oh, yes, way pre-metric. Because
yeah.
Actually, and the Romans, it started getting pushed out, but... France, for some reason, which I do have to apologize, I don't know, kept hold of the old system because other French-speaking countries like Belgium and Quebec, they do actually have numbers for like the decimals above 60.
Do they?
Like yes. So 70 in Belgium would be septons, then 80 is octons.
That makes sense much better, isn't it? That makes much more sense, septante and octante.
Well, I'm Belgian, so I agree with that, but for some reason the French don't want to switch around.
So
I live with them. Yeah, go for it.
No, you carry on, sorry.
So when I lived in Paris for a bit, I asked my French flatmate, saying, why do you not change? And they say, oh, it sounds ugly. And that was pretty much it.
So we don't know the answer to why they do it. We just know that they don't...
It's an old remnant.
Is it, though? Is it an old remnant? So because that means that the Belgians and the Quebecois changed theirs at some point in the past.
Yeah, I think it's because of the Académie Française and those things. They say, like, this is the proper way.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a round of applause for being interesting, but there is still room to go definitive on this, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, and could it be... Mark, I think, is joking when he says the French have a base of 20 because they used their fingers and their toes, whereas we only have a base of 10 because we only used our fingers. That doesn't work, does it, as an explanation?
I do think that the base of counting comes into it.
Maybe.
But, like, it was a Celtic base and a Roman base.
Fingers and
toes. And they stuck to the Gaulic base. Because, like, I used to ask my French teacher, what's it? And he said, oh, it's an old Gaulic thing they never got rid of.
They never got over it. Well, round of applause for Ben. Thank you.
Thank you.
But still, as I say, I think a little bit of room to go definitive on that one. 03456060973 is the number you need. I was going to say something funny then and say, or as they'd say in French, but there's no joke I can do there, is there? It would be, no. I shouldn't really have mentioned it. Sorry. Mike's in Arundel. Mike, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. 15th time for coolery. I just thought I'd get that out.
Well played. Yeah, don't start a habit, though, please, because there'll be hell to pay if everyone does that. Go on.
If I ask, I wonder about the French-speaking part of the Belgium being the Ardennes. I wonder if they do their numbers.
No, that's an interesting observation.
I'm wondering about spiders. Can a spider get caught in another spider's web?
Didn't we do this? Could you excuse me a moment, Mike? I'm just going to speak to my colleagues. Is anyone paying attention? Didn't we do this about a month ago? Can I spike Keith? Hello? We did, didn't we? Thank you. Well, why is he... don't all start arguing with each other. We're all on the same team, for heaven's sake, honestly. But I thought if it's got all the way to air... And we answered it about a month ago, and I can't remember the answer now. I'm 50 years old, but yes, the spider can get caught on another spider's web. No, I've forgotten. I'm going to have to leave it on the board. Where were you last? It was about a month ago. Why aren't you tuning in every week?
Well, I don't know. I can't always get a seat when I drive a truck, so
It's a fair answer as well. All right, I shall try and find out for you. But as a general rule, you can't. I mean, it's not Mike's fault. It's everybody else's fault except mine, especially Keith. Keith, this is part of your job, mate. You're supposed to be in charge. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
When you struggle with spots, everyone's an expert on why. Too much sugar? The wrong soap? Nah, I've heard it all. So let's help clear it up. Acnicide treatments kill up to 95% of spot-causing bacteria, which helps reduce spots. Grab yours at Superdrug now and save a third until the 13th of July. Acnicide, real experts in clearer skin. Acnicide is for the treatment of mild facial acne. Contains 5% benzoyl peroxide. Always read the label.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 12:33. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Well played to Nathaniel, who just heard me blaming the fact that Mike got through with a question about spiders that we dealt with a month ago. He heard me blaming it on everybody except myself and texted very quickly, this is the shaggification of James O'Brien. That's a bit of an in-joke there for people who listen properly every day, not like old Mike, who can't get a signal sometimes. And Keith didn't say it wasn't me in my ear, if anyone thinks they heard that. He said Amelia Cox in my ear, so that I would be aware of who the newsreader was going to be in the last bulletin. Back to Mystery Hour. Rick's in Manchester. Rick, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I was just curious about nursery rhymes and the background. Some of them are quite horrific, really, when you think of Humpty Dumpty, Three Blind Mice. But then you go into things like Oranges and Lemons.
Yeah.
It's got the line about, here comes a candle to light you to bed, here comes a chopper to chop off your head.
Yeah.
I was wondering why they're so gruesome, really, when they're supposed to be said to children.
I mean, children quite like gruesome stuff. As Roald Dahl and David Walliams would tell you. More memorable as well. Humpty Dumpty, I think, is about a cannon originally. It has a sort of historical... something fell off a castle wall or something like that. But do you know what? I don't know if there'll be an answer to this, Rick. I'll put it on the board. But I think it's probably because children quite like grim stuff, don't they? Which is why... I mean, the Brothers Grimm, actually, funnily enough. Grimm with one M and with two Ms. But the original versions of the Brothers Grimm tales are beyond... gory. The way in which I think the stepmother in Snow White meets her end is absolute. Do you know what they do?
Go on.
They get some metal boots, and they heat them up in a fire so that they're absolutely scalding hot, and then they force her feet into them so that it all fuses and melts, and she then has to stomp around in them for the rest of her life. I think that's Snow White. It's certainly one of them. So I think they've always been pretty pretty gruesome, because kids like gruesome stuff. They never like the sort of...
pretty good.
I think the
Ring-a-Ring-a-Roses, that's almost like a bit of a warning, isn't it?
That's about the plague, I think, although that might be apocryphal. It might be one of those things everybody thinks they know, but turns out not actually to be true. But certainly everybody thought it was about the plague. I'll put it, why are nursery rhymes so gruesome? And then the answer, I don't know if anyone can go definitive on it. They're also cautionary tales, aren't they, sometimes? I think someone's just texted that they're cautionary tales. Not really.
Jack and Jill. The one that really picked at me was the Oranges and Lemons. I couldn't understand why it suddenly went so dark after being so light and melodious, effectively.
Say that again? Sorry.
Yeah, why did Oranges and Lemons suddenly go so dark after being quite, it's quite a pleasant rhyming...
Again, probably just because, the grim bit appeals more to the children, grim with one M. Listen, it's on the board, Rick, we shall find out. 12:37 is the time. Why are nursery rhymes so gruesome? Can a spider catch a spider? Why do lullabies work? Why don't the French have proper numbers for 70, 80, 90 and the like? Ben kind of half answered that. I'm going to have to start a trade union or something if it carries on like this. It's like take industrial action. How do chilies work? How do they burn your mouth without burning your mouth? Why can't you tell that a straight road is a hill, is going up a hill? And did humans ever schedule their childbirth, if you like, for the spring in the way that so many other animals do? We need some answers now. Come on. Alex is in Nottingham. Alex, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Alex.
So it's about the last one, about whether humans schedule their birth in spring. It's not so much about scheduling. It's the fact that different animals have different reproductive cycles. So we as humans have a reproductive cycle based on the lunar month, roughly 28 days. So we menstruate every 28 days and we're fertile every 28 days. But with animals, it's quite different. So lambs, for instance, sheep, they'll come into season in the autumn, and that's why they end up having their lambs in the spring. Dogs, for instance, will come into season a couple of times a year. So they're only actually fertile at certain times of the year. So then in terms of their gestation period, for how long they carry each baby, depends on when they eventually have them, at what time of year.
And 'twas ever thus.
Yes.
I imagine. So offspring is going to be linked to the animal kingdom, even though we use it in the context of humans.
Yeah, exactly, because, I mean, obviously we...
And there'll be an evolutionary reason for animals to have done this, because the likelihood of their babies surviving is going to be higher if they're born in spring, because they're not going to get cold and hungry like they would if they were born in December or something like that. So there's a reason for their cycles evolving
exactly,
over millions of years, whereas with humans,
yeah.
once we'd mastered the art of shelter and storing food, then there'd be no need. There'd be no evolutionary advantage to having a cycle. I wonder whether very, very early humans had a different cycle. Do you know?
That I don't know. I'm more basing it on what I know from the animal kingdom and why they have their reproductive cycles. So, like prey species, it makes sense for them all to give birth at the same time. Safety in numbers.
Of course.
They'll be
of course.
Up and running around pretty quickly after they're born.
Yeah.
So again, that's why they tend to be more in the spring months, whereas predators like your dogs or cats, it doesn't matter.
Ah,
that's
fascinating.
As much.
And humans, I guess, are in the predator class, aren't they, rather than the prey
exactly.
class? Oh, what a beautiful answer. That's right, because I was just thinking about all the little cygnets and goslings around my way that have been... I get so invested in them. I don't know whether... Are you a vet? Is that right? That's your qualifications on this. I find the emotional attachment hard to avoid with little fluffy birds, and I keep count, and it's quite grim how many of them disappear in the course of a season. There's one couple of swans near us who I think are older. They've kept seven on the go, and they've all made it to adolescence. And then there was another pair on the canal who only had three to start with, and went down to one. I think they're very young. Does that make sense? Would older, more experienced swans be better at protecting their cygnets?
I think that would make sense. Yeah, any sort of inexperienced mothers don't necessarily. They'll have some instincts, but experience always helps with that sort of thing.
I think it's the herons. I think it's the herons. I used to like herons, but they're like nasty dinosaur-like birds. It's the herons get the little chicks and the little. Sorry, this is not what you were expecting when you rang in, is it, Alex?
No, I have to say, I'm not specialising in the wildlife quite so much these days.
Would you like a round of applause?
Yes, please.
There you go. Beautiful. So now we know why it is different. We don't know for sure whether or not early humans would have been on a different cycle, but it seems unlikely. 12:41 is the time. Hannah is in Burnham. Hannah, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on, Hannah.
How do women get over the menopause when changing levels of oestrogen and progesterone don't come back?
Are you sure you phoned the right programme? It sounds like some sort of medical hour that you've accidentally been put through to from the olden days of LBC.
No, I'm just curious.
Well, I'm curious as well, but it's a slightly odd question for mystery hour. I mean, it does sound like something that's quite important, for example.
Yeah, but I guess in many respects, I wanted to raise awareness of it as well, because
good.
When I speak to people, people often don't know the answer to that, and they don't know where to look and don't know where to start in terms of finding out about it. But oftentimes when I also speak to people, they say, oh, I'm over that. And I'm like,
can you be over it when you haven't gone back to where you were before? So it's something different, isn't it, post-menopause from... Maybe it's just like a hangover. Maybe it's just like a hangover. And no, I mean this, like a massive hangover.
Right.
And as you get used to the decline in the amount of hormones, it feels terrible. But then eventually the hormones have reached their new level and slowly your body and your brain get used to it and Bob's your uncle. I'm not going to go defeat. I'm not going to give myself a round of applause for that one, Hannah. I think it's fair's fair. Just read the question again. How do women get over the menopause when
changing levels of estrogen and progesterone don't come back?
Yeah, I like that. Okay, you're on. I shall try and find out for you. It must be a fairly.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. It must be a fairly straightforward answer, I'd imagine. Ray's in Cardiff. Ray, question or answer?
I've got an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's about the lullabies and how the lullabies work.
Carry on.
And you were pretty near the mark when you said it's about the womb. In fact, what happens when the fetus is in the womb is that there is a what's called a triple meter, a sort of three and a bar beat that is rocking and swaying, and that actually relaxes the fetus in the womb. So lullabies mimic that once they're born. And in fact, when we play lullabies, tape lullabies to babies in SCBU or intensive care, their oxygen levels improve, their respiratory rates improve, their cardiovascular function improve, and their signs of inflammation decrease. So there is a real physiological and psychological effect to why and how lullabies work.
And what do they all have in common musically? Do you know? I sense that your expertise isn't in music, it's in medicine, but do we know what it is?
No. I'm a drummer. And, three in the bar has been identified, because I'm also an associate professor in life sciences at the University of South Wales.
Okay,
it's something that I've looked into.
What would you rather be if I could give you three wishes? What would you rather be, a professor of life sciences or a famous rock and roll drummer?
A rock and roll drummer, hands down every time.
Oh, you didn't even pause. Yeah. Didn't even pause.
No, and can I just quickly say about the menopause?
No, you can't do that. Sorry, you're only allowed to answer one question. Rules are rules.
Okay,
For drumming professors of life science. And you've already told us. Hang on, don't go yet. You get one of these. Very nicely played. 12:45 is the time.
Some things just add some play to your day. Catching the toast as it pops out of the toaster. Dancing down the street to your favourite playlist. Wearing your sparkly boots to the shop. And best of all, picking the new yellow scratch card.
A yellow scratch card, please. Thank you.
And doing your own drum roll. This is exciting. Add some play to your day with scratch cards from the National Lottery. Search Dream Big, Play Small. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:48 is the time. I sometimes think of questions that might be phone-ins and might not. I should probably have a conversation with colleagues before I decide. But did your attitude to the royal family change when the age of the prominent people... So when I look at Prince William, when I look at William Windsor, who's celebrating his 40th birthday this week, and think about him becoming king, I feel very differently from how I do about the thought of the Queen being Queen, or even Prince Charles, or even Charles Windsor being King. I don't know why. I think that sense of natural injustice kicks in when it's someone your own age or younger. You say, well, what the hell would I, how can he be my King? It's just like some kid. I don't know. Is there a topic in that, do you think? Probably not. One thing this week that I decided wasn't going to justify a topic was, it turns out that restaurants are really loud. I thought I was going a bit deaf because I can never hear people talking when I'm in restaurants. But it turns out it's quite a widespread problem that has been written about, including a rather jolly piece in the Times today. Anyway, I digress, okay? Joe's in Barnet. Joe, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Joe.
So it's about peppers. You were on the right line with, you said capsin, I think, but it's capsaicin.
Capsaicin receptors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Capsaicin in chilies, they activate, there's a protein called TRPV1, which is the same protein when we sense burning or pain.
Okay.
So it activates that protein when we eat it, and that's what causes the burning sensation.
Do we know why? Do we know why it activates it? I mean, what the... Would it be to discourage you from eating it, or evolutionarily, if that's the correct word to use?
I would imagine so. I would imagine our bodies are quite, to maintain homeostasis, you know, a sense of order. We would prefer not to have things that hurt.
Love it.
So that would activate the protein. But interestingly, people who eat spicy foods can grow a tolerance to it, so the receptors can be dulled down, and therefore they go hotter and hotter and hotter.
That's a lovely
answer. And
is there? I mean, in the context of real burns, as in heat, does the protein do anything? Does it serve a purpose? Is it a sort of emergency response? Do we know?
It would be the emergency response to remove the stimulus.
So, God, that hurts. Get off. Take your hand off the plate, quick, sort of thing.
Exactly.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I love it. Qualifications?
I'm currently studying for the entrance exams for med school, and they use capsaicin in certain areas of medicine, like arthritis, as research, and I was looking into it and how capsaicin worked.
Fantastic, and good luck. Have a round of applause.
Thank you very much. Well,
what a clever bunch we are on Mystery Hour. Stuart's in Greenwich. Stuart, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
So, it's the spider question. And the answer is that spiders can get stuck in other spiders' webs.
Awesome.
But equally, they can also get stuck in their own web.
Can they?
Because, yeah, so basically the whole web itself isn't sticky.
That's right.
It's slight little globules or little droplets of stickiness.
Yes.
That sort of put all around the web, and the spider who made the web obviously knows where they are, so they avoid them, whereas any other spider wouldn't and would therefore potentially get stuck. So if you took a spider from its own web and threw it back at the web
into the sticky bit. How do they get to their prey then if the prey is on a sticky bit?
Well, ultimately the prey's stuck on the sticky bit and covering it, isn't it? So they can still get round the path that they know, which is why they wouldn't necessarily just go straight to it.
Yeah, maybe. Qualifications?
So there's two parts to this. One is I didn't hear it on Mystery Hour last month,
no.
But I think I heard it on Mystery Hour many, many moons ago. And then we went to a zoo, and I was very quietly whispering the answer to my children so that they thought I was very clever.
Yeah, they're still young then, are they? They're still young.
They are indeed,
yeah. Make the most of that, mate. It doesn't last, seriously. Quite the opposite,
they,
in fact.
They still think I know everything.
Yeah, the more, nice. In fact, the cleverer you are as you get older, the less impressed your children will be. So seriously, mate, hey, well, that particular sun shines.
Definitely.
But
and then obviously the expert that was showing the spiders said exactly the same thing that I'd heard previously on Mystery Hour many, many moons ago.
Round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Beautifully done, Stuart. Nicely done, spiders. There we go. Mike's question, Stuart's answer. 12:53 is the time. Louise is in Matlock. Louise, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's about the menopause.
Oh, yes.
So basically, when women stop producing oestrogen, the oestrogen receptors aren't activated anymore. So the oestrogen receptors, they keep your skin a little bit softer, so your skin gets harsher. They keep your boobs nice and pert, which is why
Speak for yourself, Louise.
And it's just the oestrogen, things that stop. Your periods stop and your body starts aging and the protective effect of oestrogen.
But they never go back up again. So how can you say that you're over the menopause? That's what Hannah wanted to know. How can it be over if the levels have stayed low,
Because your body adapts to the fact that there's no longer oestrogen.
You just get used to it. Hangover.
I'm going to be trashed, haven't I, by women everywhere.
Why?
Now. Because you just get used to it.
But is that the correct medical answer?
Well, pretty much, yeah. Your body adapts to things and there's no longer oestrogen.
That sounds
reasonable.
Your
cardiovascular risks go up to equivalent to a man. Which isn't good.
No, definitely not. What are your qualifications?
I'm a doctor.
Well, that's it then. What are you worried about? You're a doctor. That's a cat's a get out of jail free card. Well, with one or two rather obvious exceptions.
Yes.
A round of applause for Louise. Very nicely done. 12:54 is the time. James is in Royston. James, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
This is to the nursery rhyme question.
Hmm.
In fact, the children's stories are still dark now as they were back.
They are. Roald Dahl, David Walliams. Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, and Terry Deary as well. The Horrible Histories really focus in on the grim stuff, don't they?
And kids love it.
Yeah, they do.
That really goes back down to the nursery rhymes. In Orange is Lemons, that was a condemned man on his way to the gallows, which we have the sounds of the bells in London.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew it was the bells in London, but obviously as the journey unfolds and he gets closer to Tyburn, then the song gets darker, the lyrics get darker.
That's right. And as you know, kids remember themes and remember tunes and lyrics quite easily. It's a way of, educating them. In a non-dark way, but in a dark way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. You use the shivers to get the lesson across. I mean, that probably is where Horrible Histories would be the best example, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, nursery rhymes are days of illiteracy for children as well.
Great stuff.
Educate.
Qualifications?
History degree.
Beautifully done.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Annie's in Bromley. Annie, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. A question, please.
Yes.
Why do they weigh jockeys and motor racing drivers after their races?
To make sure they haven't nicked anything.
Ah.
Well, to see how much they've lost.
I don't know. What's the point?
To see how much weight they've lost in the race.
Oh, okay.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
Well, no, nor do I. I think it might be for different reasons. Oh, yeah. No, it's just because there's limits, or there's weight limits on cars and on...
I'm assuming they'll all have lost weight anyway.
Yeah, so, no, you get weighed before and you get weighed after to make sure that you haven't cheated in any way carrying weights.
To lose a pound.
Yeah, by carrying weights when you went into the pre-race way. No, this is what you do. You'd have a sort of bag of flour in your pocket or something like that. Or stuff
like
down the front of your
something in their trousers.
And then, yes, exactly that. And then when you come back out of the race, they weigh you again to make sure that it makes sense. That's bound to be it, like a handicapping process.
Okay.
Round
thank
of applause
you very
for
much.
Me.
No, have a good day.
Thank you very much. Round of applause for me. There's no time for anyone to challenge me on that one, he says, glancing at the clock. Helen's in Henley. Question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on,
more information on an answer.
Is it the French numbers then? Because that's the
is.
One. Go on. What have you got?
It is. Well, I don't know how much more there was that I can give, but it was basically the Viking system that was then taken over by the Normans.
Right.
This was the system where they went up in 20s. And then it's when the French Republic spread, then they retained that system. And Belgium and Switzerland, for example, went to a different system. So instead of saying 70, they say 70.
They do. But not the Canadians, apparently. The original question, or Ben may have got that slightly wrong, but Belgium and Switzerland do definitely say 70, 80, 90.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
but the thing is, the French colonials came from France, so that's why the Canadian system adopted the same system as the French and retained this clumsy way of saying it.
I see. So
they went.
So what came first is the 70s.
The Viking, then the Norman system.
And then the French kept it, and the other tribes of Northern Europe adopted
decided not to,
a more sensible version.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful
that's
answer.
French for you.
sacre bleu. Qualifications, Helen, please.
I have an honours degree in French, and I've lived here for 18 years.
There we go.
Awesome.
How about that? What do you mean you've lived here for 18 years? You're in Henley.
Well, I am part of the time in Henley and a lot of time in France.
Oh, very nice. And you haven't been affected?
It depends if you're the tax inspector or not.
No, don't worry. Your secret's safe with me, John. I won't tell... Pierre, I won't tell anybody. We're doing Brexit tomorrow, I think, as a phone-in, just to give you a heads up. Sheila Fogarty stole my act yesterday. I couldn't believe it. She went. Round of applause for Helen, please.
That's our lucky face.
You're not allowed to mention it if you... my friend in Ascot earlier. Last word on this. Simon in Coombe Martin in Devon. Simon, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's about the racing driving.
Yes.
They had to stop Formula One teams from cheating because the Formula One teams would run with less liquid in the car. They would run the cars underweight so that they would go faster during the race.
Yeah,
and then at the end of the race, they'd then fill up with extra liquid.
She asked why they're weighing the driver.
Because they had to separate out so the drivers.
Oh, so they can deduct the weight of the driver from the weight of the car.
Yeah, so then they have to.
I think,
so then they can.
Oh no, I'm out of time. Sheila's here. Have a round of applause anyway.
Rock and roll.
And the winner is, I think, more for sentimental reasons. It's going to be Sam with the lullaby question because he's bringing those two little twins home soon and. They're going to need to do something while they're up all night doing double feed. So why not play Mystery Hour and wait for the kids to grow up and join in? We'll do it all again tomorrow from 10, including, I think, as things stand, the Brexit phone in, because things are getting really ridiculous now. Here's Sheila Fogarty.